Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. This episode is sponsored by Ecosia, a search engine dedicated to planting trees. Whenever you do internet searches, a certain amount of ad revenue gets generated. And if you're using Ecosia instead of, say, Google, that ad revenue goes toward tree planting. The company's J.C. Bingler says it's an easy way to make a very real difference in the environment.
If you used Ecosia three times a day for a whole year, then you would be able to plant, I think, around 23 real trees.
That seems really good. Like, that seems like a lot.
Yeah, it really is. And that's even just if you use it three times a day, which means that there would be, I don't know, space for using other search engines or not being on the internet every single day.
To get started and plant your first tree, just head to ecosia.co/out. That's ecosia.co/out. So I once got a fortune cookie that said, get your mind set. Confidence will lead you on. I still have that fortune in my wallet. It lives in that little plastic window where most people keep their driver's licenses. And something about it has always felt reassuring. Like, as long as I trust in my own abilities and allow my inner confidence to take charge, I'll be okay. It's a sentiment we hear all the time, that confidence is your friend, that you should take leaps of faith and try difficult things even when they scare you, that self-assuredness is a good thing. But is it really always a good thing? On this episode, Bassam Tarazi tells the story of a hike he attempted in the mountains of New Hampshire. It's a story about what happens when feeling sure about your own capability comes back to haunt you. And it's about the fine line between confidence and cockiness. Oh, and a quick warning, since I know some of you like to listen with kids, this episode does contain a little bit of adult language.
The sign at the tree line was clear. Stop, it read. The area ahead has the worst weather in America. Many have died there from exposure, even in the summer. Turn back now if the weather is bad. The sign wasn't a surprise. The White Mountains in New Hampshire sit in the middle of several storm tracks. But I wasn't worried. It was a gorgeous summer day. I had a lifetime of mountaineering experiences behind me, and after all, this was New Hampshire, not Mount Everest. How bad could it be? It was July 2nd, 2016. I had just started the almost 23-mile Presidential Traverse. The Presidential Traverse is known as the greatest hike east of the Rockies. It involves over 8,000 feet of elevation change and takes you up and over 7 different peaks, including Mount Washington, the highest point east of the Mississippi. I was attempting to do the whole thing in one day, all 23 miles. I'd always taken a go big or go home attitude toward life. As the youngest of 3 siblings and the only American-born child of a Palestinian father and a Dutch mother, I was never sheltered from the outside world because my family was from the outside world. I have a naturally defiant attitude towards the status quo. I wanted to play with my brother and his friends, even though they were 5 years older. I wanted to be as smart as my sister. I wanted to know more. I wanted to do more. My parents supported my unending curiosity by providing a long leash. I was entrusted with the freedom to choose the life I wanted, while also knowing that my family would support me if I stumbled. That bred confidence. And the confidence opened doors of opportunity and acted like a feedback loop. It allowed me to try things that other people wouldn't. I thrived off the momentary discomfort that comes from putting yourself out there and taking risks, because rewards were so fulfilling. This confidence also helped me push myself competitively and athletically. I loved striving for the glory of the metaphorical mountaintop. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to win at everything I did. State championships and awards followed. At one point when I was a teenager, I asked my grandfather what his best life advice was. He responded, Live an interesting life. No one wants to talk to an old man with no stories to tell. So as I grew older and made my own money, I became confident in my ability to be interesting. I was into experiences over things, stories over status. Once I stopped playing organized sports after college, I got into mountaineering. Wrestling my way up difficult peaks became my own competition, my own hero's journey, my own story to tell. Trekking had taken me all over the world, Borneo, New Zealand, Chile, Mount Kilimanjaro, Everest Base Camp, and Machu Picchu. But at 36, the Hellcat in me was slowly dying, and I had finally met someone I wanted to build a life with. This yearning to do the Presidential Traverse felt like a final one-night stand with my youthful, pioneering self. There was no doubt in my mind that I could do it. Compared to so many adventures I had done in the past, this would be chump change. I'd waltz through it, enjoy my last hurrah of bachelorhood, and add the Presidential Traverse to my long list of accomplishments. Easy. On my way up to Mount Madison, fog ambushed me. Gusts came from the west somewhere near 30 miles an hour, strong but not alarming. I pulled my hat low. I figured it was the early morning clouds yet to blow away, but the winds continued to rise around every corner, enough to throw me off balance once or twice. With visibility in the tens of yards, my only guides were the cairns and the random white paint markings on the jagged rocks. Above about 4,800 feet, the craggy granite terrain looks like a cross between a meteor surface and the Hebrides. I thought it couldn't possibly get any windier than it was, but when I reached the spine of the mountain, I was blasted by an endless gale that ripped over the summit ridge. It sounded like a rocket launch. To make matters worse, I could see precisely nothing in every direction. The fog was so dense, it was like staring into a white void. It was disappointing not to get a view, but more importantly, it was totally disorienting. I usually have a good sense of direction, but now, even though my compass told me I was facing north, I felt like I was facing south. I knew I was on the right trail, but everything felt totally off. It was deeply unnerving. I stopped and took stock of the situation. A twinge of nervousness was working its way into my mind. The next three summits would be even higher than this, and that meant the weather could somehow get even worse. But I was still confident in my ability to get through this trek. You don't turn back a few miles into a hike just because of a little fog and wind. I scrambled my way to the copper pin that marked the summit of Mount Madison and continued on. Turns out, my apprehensions were right. Hiking southwest to the next summit on the traverse, Mount Adams, the heavy fog and driving winds persisted, but now the temperature started dropping too. I rummaged around in my pack and put on my shell jacket and rain pants. I was now wearing everything I had brought with me: wool socks, rain pants, two thermal shirts, a fleece pullover, a rain jacket, gloves, and a hat. Suddenly, I saw a person coming towards me from the opposite direction. His stride was confident. He said, "Are you coming from Madison Hut?" "Yep," I said. "Oh shit," he said. "I thought I was heading to Mount Jefferson." Mount Jefferson was on the other side of Mount Adams, the complete opposite direction he was hiking. That's how bad the visibility was. That's how strong the winds were. So bad that a seasoned hiker had gotten completely turned around. We introduced ourselves. His name was Olivier. He stared off into the distance, pondering his options. The fact that he was so disoriented should have been a warning sign. I'd read that hikers often get blown off course in the White Mountains. Powerful winds somehow steer them miles from where they're supposed to go. It seemed far-fetched at the time, that you might get yourself lost just because of wind. But here it was, happening to someone right in front of me. And yet I ignored the glaring omen of Olivier's disorientation because I've never turned back, because I was confident in my abilities, and because this was New Hampshire in the summer. I refused to believe that the weather was anything, could be anything, but a minor inconvenience. You got this, I told myself. You know what you're doing. You're in good shape. You're not a quitter. Olivier decided to turn around and hike with me in the direction he was supposed to be going all along. As we made our way up to Mount Adams, the winds began moving in at a frightening speed. 60 miles an hour? 70 miles an hour? Every time it dialed it up, I felt like I was in the belly of a chain reaction, and at any moment, the howling would whisk me into the stratosphere. There was an incessant whipping snap of loose clothing, like the shaking of a blue tarp. I had to hang my head low and lean into the wind just to stay upright. On the peak of Mount Adams, Olivia and I could barely hear each other over the roar of the wind. There would be no rest stop on this mountaintop. We started descending immediately. After 20 minutes, we reached the main trail at Thunderstorm Junction and saw a sign for Mount Washington, 5 miles away. I removed my pack and said I thought we deserved a snack. Without any fanfare, Olivier said, "No, I'm going to keep moving. I'll see you later." He disappeared into the fog before I had time to slap him in the face. I was shocked at how rattled I was. I had been ready for 18 miles and 8,000 feet, but I hadn't prepared for the wind or the fog. They stripped away my sense of direction and left me feeling drained. I was only 5.6 miles into the trip, and I was already tired. I looked at my watch. It was 8:30 a.m. I had been on the trail for 4.5 hours. I still had time to turn back. See, Sam, my fiancé, was taking the 10:30 a.m. cog train to the summit of Mount Washington. We would find each other in the visitor center around 11:30, eat, and then hike the much easier remaining half of the traverse together. So in that moment, I still had the option to bail. I could walk a mile back around Mount Adams to a ranger station, get cell phone signal, call Sam to pick me up at the trailhead in a couple hours, and no one would think lesser of me. But would I think lesser of me? Sometimes you just have to grit your teeth and embrace the suck. That's just part of adventuring, part of life, really. Not everything is a walk in the park. My mind churned with the options. Did I need to do this? Did I want to do this? Would turning back be smart mountaineering or a lack of confidence? It'll blow off, I told myself. It's only 5 miles to Mount Washington. I can do that. Maybe it was the PB&J talking. PB&Js can do wonders. During the next hour and a half, I did not see anyone else. Sometimes the terrain was wide open, and sometimes I was squeezing between slabs of granite. Regardless what was underfoot, the milky river of air tried to knock me down and swallow me whole. For the first time in my hiking life, I felt true loneliness. Am I the last guy on the trails today? I wondered. Is the weather getting worse? How steep are the climbs ahead? Do I have enough water and snacks? The warning on the trailhead sign kept sneaking its way back into my thoughts. Stop. The area ahead has the worst weather in America. Many have died there from exposure, even in the summer. Turn back now if the weather is bad. I originally thought that warning was for amateurs, but now I realize it was for a guy like me, the kind of person who was too proud to turn back, whose confidence shrouded the realities in front of him. Amateurs would be drinking hot cocoa in a hut by now.
It's Willow. We'll hear the rest of the story in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Munjal Shah is the company's CEO.
You know, I remember people used to harass me and say, hey, you know, you got to take care of your health. And I'm like, I'm running a company. I don't have time for this. Like, and all it did was make me feel bad about myself, honestly, when they'd harass me like that.
Munjal says it wasn't until he ended up in the ER with chest pain that he started leading a healthier lifestyle. And that's when he got the idea for Health IQ.
So I realized, you know, what if we could change the world's health more by celebrating the people who kind of had taken responsibility than harassing the people who hadn't?
To find out more and see if you qualify, head to healthiq.com/out there. That's healthiq.com/out there. Support also comes from Kind, makers of snacks that are designed to be tasty and healthy. You've probably seen Kind bars at your local grocery store, but instead of buying them one by one, you can get them delivered straight to your house on a regular basis. The Kind Snack Club gives you monthly shipments of your favorite snacks at a discount. And because you're listening to this podcast, we have a deal for you. You can try 10 different Kind bars for free. All you have to do is pay shipping. After that, assuming you stick with the Snack Club, you can choose which snacks you want and get them at a discount delivered right to your door each month. To get the free sample box, just go to kindsnacks.com/out there. That's kindsnacks.com/out there. And as always, we have links to all of our sponsors on our website. And now, back to the story.
A few minutes ahead, a sign. 3.1 miles to Mount Washington. That ranger station, and thus safety, was now the same distance behind me as Mount Washington was in front of me. Turning back wasn't really an option anymore. I was kicking myself for not bailing when I could have. It was becoming increasingly clear that my situation wasn't just uncomfortable, it was dangerous. I could get blown off course, just like Olivier, end up wandering down the wrong side of the mountain, and get totally, utterly lost. I could run out of food, get hypothermia. I could die out here. For several hours now, I'd been telling myself to dig deep and trust my capabilities. I'd been saying things like, come on, you can do it. This is fun. You love hiking. I soldiered on, following my confidence. But now, it was eerily clear I had made a mistake. That confidence I had been feeling, it wasn't confidence at all. It was cockiness. It was my ego talking. My inner teenager making me feel invincible, egging me on in the name of bravado. Why else would I be out here by myself, in a storm, 50 miles from nowhere, voluntarily? There was nothing else to do but push forward at this point. So, I labored on through the woolen tempest, robotic and stoic in the task ahead. I wasn't dying in fucking New Hampshire. I just need to get to Sam, I thought to myself. 2.5 miles to go. How much water is left in my camelback, I wondered. Could I collect water if I'm stuck out here? I decided to play it safe and not drink anything right now. 2.1 miles to go. Just a little sip, I told myself. 1.8 miles to go. Just one more sip. 1.4 miles to go. I'm so wet from the fog, even my bones have condensation. 1.2 miles to go. I'm never hiking again, I thought to myself. This is it. This is the last time. 1 mile to go. The hike up to Mount Washington was like trying to walk along the seafloor. Nothing but a blinding chaos. Eventually, a few other souls peppered the path, coming down from the summit or connecting to who knows where. All I would see of a person was glistening rain gear. The only acknowledgement of our shared moment was the four-fingered wave from a trekking pole. Formality without the loss of utility. I continued upward into the teeth of the storm, one nuisance-laden step at a time. The wind chill was right around freezing. get me off this fucking mountain, I thought. 0.2 miles to go. The wind gusts peaked to 94 miles an hour. 94. And this was after I'd already endured the iron-fisted, maniacal spinning of nature's weed whacker for 5 straight hours. It was a torrent of hell at a moment of complete misery. There's a road up to Mount Washington, and at the top, there's a parking lot and a visitor center. But the fog was so thick that I didn't see any of the summit structures until I was 20 feet away from them. Cars, tourists, doors, shelter. Finally, I'd clawed my way out of the abyss. 11:30 a.m. on the dot. The visitor center was so quiet and warm that it actually threw my inner ear off. I felt like I had just portaled out of Narnia. I saw Olivier, but I didn't approach him. Best to ignore traitors. To make matters worse, I looked around for Sam, but I couldn't find her. I pulled out my cell phone to call her, but there wasn't enough reception for the call to go through. I asked a ranger at the visitor center if he'd seen Sam, and he said the cog train wasn't running due to bad weather. Great. Now I'm worried about her whereabouts. Since she couldn't take the train up to meet me, did she try to make a heroic walk up in this mess? Could I use your phone? I asked. We don't have one, the ranger said. There was also no Wi-Fi. I took my pack off and sat at a table. My muscles were trembling. I chewed a protein bar and judged all the people who were merely hanging out, giggling, smiling, gift shopping, up here for the view or the bumper sticker. The summit is a hiker's podium. It's where the gawking public, if they're even allowed there, is supposed to look on in adoration and think, my gosh, where did he come from? In a storm, that divide is cruelly flipped. Instead of triumph, I felt like the guy who just washed up on shore after recklessly crashing his jet ski. I was the odd man out. I was the strange one on the beach. They were right. What the hell was I doing out there? I eventually got a hold of Sam via text. It was a mutual flood of relief. She was at the base of the cog train waiting to hear from me. I bought a ticket on the next shuttle van off the mountain. I wasn't doing the rest of the traverse alone. I was broken. In that moment, I didn't feel like I had failed in my quest of the traverse. I only felt like I had survived. When the van hit the 4,000-foot mark, the sun came out. Looking back up the mountain, I could see the swirling tentacles of the Kraken that I had just dueled with, still feasting on the higher altitudes. The average wind speed that day was 55.5 miles an hour. It was the highest daily average in 3 months. Finally, I found Sam. I hugged her for a long time. Later at dinner, I suddenly started to cry. I didn't know why at first, but eventually I said, I was fucking scared. The sad part is, it was all avoidable, but my arrogance wouldn't relent until it was almost too late. It was a dangerous mistake I'd made, listening to my ego, pushing my limits, believing I couldn't fail. I'd come out of it fine in the end, but the experience was deeply unsettling. I didn't know how I could trust my confidence ever again. I've trekked in difficult conditions before. I've waddled through the physical and mental sludge that accompanies a negative 20 degree Fahrenheit wind chill. I've hiked in blizzards so medieval it felt like frozen chainmail was ripping across my face, or even the yaks were calling uncle. I've battled a flu at 14,000 feet. And in each of those situations, my youthful drive and my unflagging confidence got me to the other side. Toughing it out had worked. Believing in myself and trusting my abilities had gotten me through. But this time the tables were turned. This time I had crossed some invisible line, the line between confidence and arrogance. There is a nobility in living on the edge, but it has to be supported with reason. I had been so sure I could do this hike in New Hampshire, it had never occurred to me to respect all the warning signs. Since then, I've thought a lot about that day in the White Mountains. I've pondered how to avoid crossing that line between confidence and cockiness again. It's not a line I want to cross in any aspect of my life. Not in my outdoor adventures, not in my work, and especially not in my marriage. I've come to the conclusion that confidence is being prepared. Cockiness is being sure. Cockiness comes out when I haven't respected reality or when I refuse to listen. Now, when I'm feeling overly confident, instead of just plunging headlong into whatever it is I'm about to do, I do a little reality check. I ask myself, why am I so sure this will work? Who will I be if it doesn't? And I do a little pre-mortem, as it were. After I've come up with a plan that I think is foolproof, I ask myself, have I prepared for the worst-case scenario? It allows me to think of all the possible setbacks that are out of my control, that I need to respect. This works for mountaineering, of course, but also for my work and my relationship. If I disagree with my wife and I'm 100% sure I'm correct, I'll stop and remind myself, if I were in her mind, I would feel exactly what she feels. Why might she feel this? What is it that I'm not seeing through my own lens? That moment of consideration, of remembering that you might be wrong, will get you through a lot of things. If you're sure you're sure, that's probably a bad sign. That teenager in you, God bless its gusto, has no idea what it's talking about.
That was Bassam Tarazi. He's an explorer and author living in Portland, Oregon. His latest book is called Borders, Bandits, and Baby Wipes, A Big Adventure in a Tiny Car. And of course, we've got a link to that on our website. Thank you to Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. Listeners are our single most reliable source of income. You guys make it possible to do what we do. If you'd like to join your fellow listeners in supporting the show, head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. You can make a one-time donation, or even better, you can contribute to our Patreon campaign. Patreon is a crowdfunding platform for creative endeavors, and it lets you make small contributions on a monthly basis. Thank you also to this week's presenting sponsor, Ecosia. Ecosia, as we said before, is a search engine that uses the ad revenue from your searches to plant trees. If everyone who listens to this podcast used Ecosia, we would be able to plant more than 250,000 trees over the course of a year. 250,000 trees! To get started, just head to ecosia.co/out. That's ecosia.co/out. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.